Chapter 11. Dawn. He should have noticed it earlier. When women talk with someone they are attracted to, their faces light up. And Teresa's face had lit up like a college rally bonfire every time Simon swaggered into the room. He had seen it. Had he just ignored it? Hoped it meant nothing? Poor Teresa. How miserable to marry someone only to find that she really wanted someone else. Why had she stayed with him at all? A savage kick that cracked his ribs flipped him over on his back and broke him out of his fog. A hand with a red aura grabbed his skinny, scratched leg and dragged him at a shuffling pace out of the middle of the alley toward the trash can on the opposite side where the other crippled dread waited, still talking on the phone. Trace trembled, and his focus blurred under the despair and agony pressing on his mind. He knew the dread now scraping him across the pavement had torched him, but the ability to classify his malady had no power to remedy it. As the back of his head bumped across the ground, he shut his eyes, always finding Teresa and Simon and the abiding shame. Now that he thought about it, hadn't Simon always had his hands all over her? If he touched Teresa too familiarly when her husband was around, Trace could only imagine the circus romance at the office. Stolen kisses in the elevator, romps in the break room, sultry glances and depositions. Simon probably made Teresa laugh by pointing out how they were pulling one over on her stupid, under-earning husband. He could envision them draped all over each other in the supply closet while Teresa told him how Trace never could make her feel like he did. Surrender. He could do it now. The dreads would finish him off with a quick shot to the heart and dunk in the tub. He would turn to ashes and flow down the drain and into oblivion, escaping his sorrow. But as he let the limping dread drag him away, a spark fired within his leaden heart, an impulse to survive, to defy the pain. And although the smothering thoughts returned almost immediately to wash over him like a relentless tide, he clung to the spark and tried to muscle through the despair. With effort, he yanked his foot from the dread's iron grasp and rolled away, shredded backpack falling from his shoulders. Wobbling, he stood, stumbling down the alleyway toward the street. Teresa, so beautiful. No, fight it. The phone call meant more dreads were coming. Surely the police would come too. One of the hotel's clients would have called in a gun battle in the alley. The bright sun in the street beckoned to him, and he exerted all his strength to get out of the shadows and leave his hampered pursuers behind. He didn't bother to look back. Get out of the shadows. Run. He staggered into the bus stop bench, hands and arms shaking. The warmth and light of the sun revived him slightly, and he struck out with more speed, enough to escape two dreads with two functioning legs between them, but not enough to get away from anyone or anything else. The twisted emotions coursing through his head had the fastest legs of all, and even the pure light of an afternoon sun couldn't slow them enough for Trace to break completely free. Faces and concerned glances would sometimes register as he wandered like a sleepwalker up and down sidewalks and streets with no conscious direction. Teresa and Simon seemed to loiter at every street corner, in every car, and in every window, taunting him with knowing, perfect smiles. How long after they had been married had Teresa wanted to get away from him? He remembered the first time she'd missed one of their lunch dates downtown. He'd sat at the table of the Italian restaurant, smelling the marinara and oven-baked breadsticks for an hour. She had never come. She hadn't called. She hadn't even answered his texts. That night she'd apologized profusely and was so affectionate and sweet and giving, he had almost forgotten the whole incident. That was probably the first day she had given in to Simon. The sting of it twisted his gut, but he couldn't stop replaying it in his mind. The passage of time meant nothing. His thoughts wound about in a ring, always returning to the same place and starting over.
Get out of the road, stupid kid!
The outside world intruded on him again, an unpleasant distraction keeping him from perceiving his life in the honest light of reality. Evening had come. Soft golden rays and shadows that normally cast the world into a friendly glow now surrounded him with decay and the coming darkness. The dying sun would heal the dreads, and the night rushed at him as relentlessly as they had. His trembling worsened as day slipped into the tomb of night, the outside world turning as nebulous and forbidding as the inside of his mind. He had no idea where he was. Fewer office buildings and businesses lined the road now, houses taking their place. These houses were new, just like the one he and Teresa had bought with her money, because he had none. If she had married a rich lawyer, she wouldn't have had to support some pathetic student and could have used her money to buy more expensive dresses or travel. She'd probably married Simon already. Probably hadn't even waited until her dead husband was cold in the ground. He wouldn't put it past Simon to have planned his demise. Teresa might have helped. They knew that fragile Darcy would snap if she found out Simon was cheating on her. She wouldn't blame her charming husband, of course. She would grab a gun and find Trace, the real one to blame, the one who couldn't keep his own wife happy, forcing her to look for satisfaction elsewhere. He deserved to get shot. He'd ruined Darcy's life and torn apart her fairy tale marriage. Full darkness had descended. He ambled along a sidewalk, passing under the weak cones of light coming from beckoning street lamps. Where was he? He rubbed his eyes. His jumpy, blurry vision didn't care to take in the outside world, but locked its gaze ever inward where the real darkness waited. The fence. That was the fence where Cassandra had baited the perv. Trace had walked all the way back to the elementary school on pure instinct. He turned toward the street and fell as his heavy feet slipped off the curb. He landed hard on his face with a grunt, splayed half on the sidewalk, half off. Ash Angels didn't get tired, but he was tired. A worn to the bone weary. Gravel bit into his cheek, but the numbness and exhaustion and cool gutter negated these discomforts. He had said he would come back to the school, and he had. He was done. He wished he could stop shaking and still his mind, but the loathing and horror pulled at him like a mighty tide, tugging him back into the stormy ocean where Teresa and Simon mocked him over and over, burying him in the surf. Stupid jarhead, look at me. Come on, look. It was Cassandra, no longer a child. Voice conveying an atypical tone. Concern. Night still prevailed. She had scooped him off the pavement and carried him somewhere. A car engine purred nearby. Is he all right? Goldbo asked. No, he's not all right. They've torched him, and he's banged up all to hell. Trace, you beautiful idiot, stay with me. You have to fight it. Don't let it pull you back inside. Stay with me. Right here. Look at my eyes, Trace. Trace tried. Her intense blue eyes begged for his attention, but his mind wanted so badly to slide away. She put him in the back of the car and climbed in with him. Let's get him to Lake Pleasant, Goldbo.
The lake? He's in bad shape. He needs the shrinks at Trevex.
The lake, Cassandra ordered. I want him to see the dawn there. We'll get him back to Trevex when he's cleaned up and doing better.
Dr. Dawn it is, Goldbo said.
The car hummed away, and Cassandra pulled Trace onto her lap, wrapping her arms around him to calm the shaking. It helped.
Priscilla, he croaked. Is she?
She's fine. You saved her, Trace. You did it. It's over.
The happiness he should have felt refused to come. Sadness clawed at him, and tears fell unbidden from his eyes. He should have let Teresa see him cry. Would she have cared? Had she cried in secret too when she realized she had married the wrong man?
I wish I could have been what she wanted, he sobbed. I thought I was a good husband. I tried.
Hush, Trace, Cassandra soothed. Stay with me out here. Dawn is coming soon, I promise.
Are you crying, Cassie? Goldbo asked. His tone one of disbelief.
Of course not. Shut up and drive. Cassandra hauled Trace out of the car, lugging him toward the water.
Just a few more minutes, Trace. Hold on.
The crispness of the morning and sharp breeze roused him enough that he could see rippling water as they neared a rough shoreline of dirt and rock. In the sky above, a few tendrils of colorful red clouds foreshadowed the coming dawn and perhaps a coming storm. Goldbo waited behind them as Cassandra lowered Trace to the ground beside her, propping him up with her arm a few feet from the lapping water. Her heavy metal ringtone sounded, and she swore, turning it off as fast as she could. Then, the dawn. The bullets in his back slowly worked their way out of his body and fell to the ground. His cracked ribs knit together, and his scrapes were smoothed over with new skin. At last, the black hole sucking down all the light in his mind closed, and his control over his thoughts returned. He felt rejuvenated, but the rapture failed to produce its normal giddy effect. He felt sobered. His body was fit and ready to run, but his mind retained the weight of the last 12 hours. He closed his eyes and opened them again, welcoming the clean air and soft light of a morning on the lake.
"Thanks for finding me, guys," he said. "I got wrecked. This time was way worse. Look, I know I stepped over the line again. I just couldn't leave her to the dreads without trying. I couldn't do it. I hope Ramus understands."
Cassandra regarded him with a look that almost seemed like admiration.
"You don't have to explain, at least not to me. You want to go back to Trevex now, or do you want to hang here or at my place for a while?"
"How many forms do you think I'm looking at for this stunt?"
She grinned and stood up.
"Plenty."
He inhaled just to taste the air.
"Well, I suppose I'd better get to it. You know how slow I am."
No sooner had he spoken than her phone rang again. She checked the screen.
"Ramus, I told him to bug off until at least an hour after dawn."
She clicked a button.
"Yeah?"
she answered with a rude tone.
"He's fine. I'm well aware of that, for the love of mercy. We'll be back when we're back."
She hung up.
"He can get things done, but I wonder if he has a soul sometimes. I guess I can't blame him. The Archai, the Michaels, and the Medius are all riding his case to find out what happened out there. You're the only one with all the answers. Thanks to you, the Michaels were able to burn 4 dreads yesterday with no Ash Angel losses."
Trace nodded and started back to the car.
"Is Priscilla really okay?"
"She's safe. She was pretty shaken up when the Michaels caught up to her on the bus. The dawn may have helped. What happened to her would be horrible for any Ash Angel, but for her, I'm not sure we'll get her out of the Trevex complex for a few months."
Goldbo, who seemed subdued, finally spoke.
"So what happened after you bailed out of the car?"
Trace waited until they had all climbed into the same vehicle he had abandoned before relating the tale in full. Telling them helped to lighten the burden in his mind. It had been hard to focus on anything after the dread torched him, but he remembered now why he had jumped out of the car against protocol. For the first time, his satisfaction over what he had accomplished began to grow. Ramus might rant and rave when he returned, but unlike the Nazi streaker stunt, he regretted nothing he had done to save Priscilla, and he would not apologize or sign any contracts or forms promising he would never do anything like it again. Even better, when he finished his story, Cassandra, who had joined him in the back seat, was smiling.
"This fixes everything."
"What?" Trace asked.
"You got your first bestowal. You see, Archon Ramus is no doubt planning to rip you up one side and down the other for disobeying me and ignoring protocol again, but the fact that you received your bestowal puts him in a serious bind. Most Ash Angels get their bestowals within a couple months. Blanks don't get them for at least a year. You've gotten yours even before a few of the other cherubs in your class. Some bestowals are given for no apparent reason, but when they are given in circumstances like yours, it is seen as a mark of divine approval. I can't wait until Ramus finds out. This is fantastic."
Goldbo caught Cassandra's enthusiasm.
"And when Arcus Mars finds out he's been given the gift of strength,
He's going to press Ramus twice as hard to move Trace over to the Michaels. A blank with strength and fighting skills? Awesome. Mars might get his wish, Cassandra conjectured. If Trace here keeps blowing protocol, there's no way Ramus will recommend him to the Gabriels. Though Arcus Magdalene, she's the Arcus over the Gabriels, might take him away because, well, blank numbers are thin right now. A break in the conversation gave Trace the opportunity to ask a question that had bugged him since he became coherent. Does the fact that I had a vision when I got my bestowal mean that I have some other gift too? Or is that just a part of receiving the bestowal? Seems like Priscilla had one too. It's normal, Cassandra answered. When a bestowal comes, you are often led to where you are to use it. Not always. If you do have other foretellings, be careful. You'll end up stuffed in a hole somewhere forever. The Oculum is highly protected, highly secretive, and by all accounts a deadly dull assignment. I don't feel particularly strong right now, Trace observed. Goldbow jumped in. Bestowals have to be activated. They come from the divine energy within you called Virtus. Virtus is expended as you use it, and your supply can run out. When it does, it's as close as you'll come to being tired as an ash angel, unless you get torched or decide to go swimming. I have speed and toughness as my gifts so far, and I can only run those for about an hour before I feel like I need to stop.
We'll practice, Cassandra reassured him.
They arrived at Trevex about the time the mortal employees showed up for work, finding themselves in a queue at the guard shack while the sickly Edward Grain checked ident cards. Ramus called and told them to come to Trevex D rather than Trevex B to avoid unnecessary contact with the normals who worked there. The clouds had thickened as the morning progressed, mirroring Trace's mood as they slid into the parking lot. Ramus, Athena, and a third Ash Angel, a spindly man dressed in a gray suit and tie, awaited them outside on the walkway. Trace steeled himself for another run-in with the head of training operations.
That's Oberon, Cassandra informed him none too pleasantly in reference to the man with Ramus. He's a shrink. I called in your status this morning while you were inside your own head. This is the second time you've been torched, so I think the shrink is standard procedure.
I'll pass.
I don't think you get to choose, Cassandra said.
Trace got out and walked up to the welcoming party, Cassandra catching up to him like a mother walking a child to a doctor's appointment. Athena scribbled madly on her clipboard. For the first time since dawn, Trace took stock of his appearance. Shredded shirt, dirt-cake jeans, and shoes. He could only imagine what his face and hair looked like. He stood up as tall as his 8-year-old frame allowed and walked toward Ramus, who had his hands behind his back, regarding him coolly.
Good news, Ramus,
Cassandra announced brightly with a hint of challenge in her voice. Not only is he not a pile of ash, but he received his first bestowal during Priscilla's rescue. Isn't that amazing? Ramus remained composed but arched his eyebrows.
Is that so? So early?
That's right.
Well, we must have him debriefed and then evaluated by Oberon immediately, he said, gaze still frosty. The entire Archai has called me this morning wanting information.
Cassandra put her hand on Trace's diminutive shoulder.
Not a chance, Ramus. He sees Priscilla first, then he gets to morph and get cleaned up. Then, maybe, you can shove all your forms and shrinks and the entire Archai at him.
We need the Cassandra cut him off.
You and the others can spend your time figuring out how in the hell our little training operation got blown.
Let's go, Trace.
She turned back to the Archon.
Is Priscilla back in class or still in the infirmary?
Infirmary, the Archon answered curtly, his tone odd. Trace looked up at Ramus as he passed and found his gaze pegged to Cassandra, face registering a hint of affection and a touch of sadness. Cassandra, the one person who openly treated him with disdain, was the one person he seemed to value above anyone. Was his interest in Cassandra paternal? Romantic? Trace doubted he would ever find out. Cassandra accompanied Trace to the elevator. The infirmary was on the fourth floor. Once the doors closed and they were alone, Cassandra turned to him.
Look, Trace, I don't know what kind of crap Ramus is going to put you through. Just remember you have some leverage with the bestowal. Don't let him back you into some corner full of paperwork and contracts. Don't hide anything either. You didn't do anything wrong.
Thanks for the advice, Trace replied. And thanks again for coming to find me.
You're welcome. Well, I'm heading back down. I'm not sure when training will resume, but I'll see you then. Give me a call if you need me to tell anyone off.
The doors opened and Trace stepped out, giving Cassandra a wave before she disappeared behind the brushed metal doors. He couldn't be sure what part of the last 24 hours had transformed his trainer into something more accommodating, but he liked it. He also doubted it would last. She'd cut him some slack for a couple days, and then ride his case as hard as ever. But she had called him by his real name. Progress for sure. As with the administrative offices, the infirmary seemed a completely different building than the rest of the Trevex complex, and certainly nothing like a hospital. Excepting some offices with large glass windows, the rest of the floor looked more like a posh apartment complex with a religious theme. White marble statues of famous historical figures and delicate angels graced the recessed arches and the wide hallways, and painted murals of pastoral scenes evoked calm and peace. In the reception area, a mural of the parable of the Good Samaritan ran ceiling to floor. The Samaritan clutched the fallen traveler and looked outward as if to judge everyone who came into the room. A young-looking ash angel with dark hair and a round, friendly face sat at a low desk in a brightly lit room. He regarded the child-sized Trace with some curiosity.
"Can I help you?" he asked. "I'm looking for Priscilla. Do you know what room she's in?"
"And who are you?" he asked.
"Trace, I'm a blank, and I'm not in the system." His eyes shot wide.
"Dude, you're him."
He stretched out his hand.
"It's nice to meet you. I'm Jacob. Yeah, Oberon said to clear his entire morning for you."
"The entire morning?" Trace gasped.
"Yeah, looks like you've had a rough night. Oberon's not in yet. Well, I've been given leave to get cleaned up and visit Priscilla first. Is there somewhere I can take a shower and maybe get some adult clothes?"
"Oh, sure. I'll unlock 411 for you and call wardrobe. Priscilla's in 432 when you're ready."
"Great, I appreciate it." "No problem. Anything you need, anything at all. The rooms all have a call panel to the front desk, and I'll leave the clothes inside the door."
Trace thought it best to morph and shower before visiting Priscilla. She certainly didn't need any reminders of her abduction, and Trace wanted to be regular sized again. The interior of the rooms matched the opulence of the exterior with plush furniture, golden trim and fixtures, and just enough practicality to seem like a place someone would live rather than just visit. He started morphing while in the shower, but didn't finish for over an hour. The clothes provided him continued the Salvation Army theme with a stained gray hoodie and a well-used pair of jeans and tennis shoes. When done, he walked to room 432 and knocked, waiting for a weak come in before opening the door. The drapes were shoved aside and the lights all on, flooding the room with both real and artificial light. Airy classical music, turned down low, issued feebly from a small pair of speakers embedded in the ceiling. Priscilla stood to greet him formally, and Trace smiled at her and at the ancient rocking chair that had clearly been fetched just for her. More embroidery awaited on a table. Her big brown eyes were troubled, and Trace detected a slight trembling of her hands, even though she had them crossed in front of her. She had morphed into her old grandma self, gray hair done up in a bun and outdated blue dress engulfing her.
"Hey there," he greeted her as cheerily as he could. "I wanted to stop by and see how you are doing."
She looked on the verge of tears. He came forward and she held out her hand, bent at the wrist. It took him a moment to realize he was to take it. She curtsied and then invited him to sit in the recliner, which someone had scooted aside to make room for the rocking chair.
"I wanted to thank you, Trace," she said, gaze distant and voice lifeless. "I realize you put yourself at great risk to rescue me, and I will never forget what you've done.
I should apologize. I'm afraid you find me quite out of spirits today.
No apologies, Priscilla. After what we've been through, I think we deserve a little downtime. I don't feel 100% today either.
She picked up her embroidery and set to work, defying her shaky hands.
It is hard for me, Trace, to have any love for this world at all. In so much of my life in the South, I saw depravity and baseness. And 150 years later, it is still here, only louder. The Dreads said horrible things, Trace, just horrible. I feel like I've been splashed with filth and can't get it off. At least in my former life, I didn't feel hunted. Now I suppose I understand what all those slaves felt as they slipped from place to place.
Trace regarded her softly. Cassandra was right. It would be a while before Priscilla stepped outside Trevex.
Well, if there's anything I can do, Priscilla, just name it. At this rate, I might not graduate for another couple of years.
A knock at the door startled them both. Priscilla smoothed her dress before standing and invited the person to enter. Jacob poked his head in.
Trace, sorry to interrupt, but Ramus just called and they need you in telemeeting room 2. He said that I should tell you the entire archive is connected in case you seemed, stubborn.
The entire archive? Surely what had happened wasn't that important.
Where's telemeeting room 2?